This is Weird Al Yankovic, and you're listening to Dave and Ethan's 2000-inch Weird Al podcast, episode 227-inch.
On this episode, we interview Lisa Welchel and Mike Schmiedler from Collector's Call on MeTV about their upcoming Weird Al episode.
Very cool!
It's Dave and Ethan's 2000-inch Weird Al podcast.
It's a podcast about Weird Al.
It's Dave and Ethan's 2000-inch Weird Al.
Seriously, the whole podcast is about Weird Al.
Dave and Ethan's 2000-inch Weird Al podcast.
You don't have to listen, but we're glad you are.
Dave and Ethan's 2000-inch Weird Al podcast.
Whoa. Hey, Al. Well, while we have you here, from all of us here at Dave and Ethan's 2000-inch Weird Al podcast, we wanted to congratulate you on the big Emmy wins and nominations.
Your hugely successful film, Weird the Al Yankovic Story.
The new soundtrack and new song.
Your Broadway debut.
Yet another Grammy nomination.
An incredible graphic novel.
Another Simpsons appearance.
Your awesome 162-show international tour, including stops at Carnegie Hall, and for the first time ever, playing in Hawaii.
Your very own Weird Al pinball machine.
Two Nightmare Before Christmas live events.
Performing at San Francisco Sketchfest 2024.
The great panel at New York Comic Con.
Those really cool American Greetings birthday smash-ups.
All those Netflix cameos.
All those animation cameos.
Your Muppets Mayhem cameo.
Your Hollywood star not getting pickaxed. Yet.
Are we forgetting anything?
Thanks, guys. You forgot to mention that I got my tires rotated last Thursday.
It was absolutely intern Frank's fault for not letting us know about that. Oh, how embarrassing.
Al, we're obviously excited about everything you do, and we're looking forward to seeing what the rest of 2024 brings, and a hopefully kind of big 2025, 2026, whatever year comes after that, and beyond!
Oh, hey, Al. We've got our interviews with Lisa Welchel and Mike Schmiedler from Collector's Call coming on in a little bit. Do you want to hang around?
I'd love to, but this barista's pestering me to place my order. I know there are 27 people behind me in line, but doesn't he know I'm on a cell phone call with Dave and Ethan? Gotta go!
Bye, Al!
See you in July!
Isn't he the greatest?
The absolute best. I just wish I could have seen him better. Everything is so dark in here.
Dave? It's safe to take off those eclipse glasses now.
Oh. Whoa! That's so much better! Now I can actually see what's going on in Weird Al-related news!
Months ahead of the expected release, Julian Velard has dropped his brand new album in the middle of something exclusively on Bandcamp.
The album includes his highly anticipated track, We Should Have an Affair, featuring a cameo from Weird Al.
While the track made its world premiere right here on Dave and Ethan's 2000-inch Weird Al podcast, it was previously only available to Kickstarter backers as of the end of that campaign.
If you're hoping to stream the album on Spotify or some other streaming services, for now, you will still have to wait a few months.
But now, as of last week, you can purchase and download the album at julianvillard.bandcamp.com. Plus, physical copies have already started to arrive for Kickstarter supporters.
I got mine just the other day. This episode is brought to you in part by vegan burrito restaurant Burrito Burrito, home of the 2-pound, double-wrapped-in-a-quesadilla Burrito Burrito and Wizard Burger in Albany, New York. Come on down to Burrito Burrito and Burrito Burrito, your Burrito Burrito and Wizard Burger for mouth-watering, loaded, dare I say beefy, vegan burgers. From Albany to Uranus, Burrito Burrito and Wizard Burger feed the hungry with out-of-this-world, plant-based, real food, always vegan style. Visit burritosquare.com and wizardburger.com to order ahead.
And now it's time for What's Happening in Dr. Demento-related news!
This past weekend, many big names in the comedy music community made their way to the Los Angeles area to help celebrate Dr. Demento's 83rd birthday. And boy, was social media blowing up about it.
Dr. Demento Show royalty, Musical Mike, Jungle Judy, Whimsical Will, and Sulu were all in attendance, along with the likes of Insane Ian, TV's Kyle, Luke Ski, Steve Goody, and other demented favorites.
Also stopping by were John Bermuda Schwartz and Steve J from Weird Al's band, as well as UH Jeff Nucera, who opens Weird Al's Mail.
With his permission.
Very cool.
And now it's time for what's happening in Dave and Ethan's 2000-inch Weird Al podcast-related news.
Later this month, you can catch Ethan and I as guests on the Weird Pals podcast, along with Matt and Matthew of the Weird Algorithm podcast and Lauren of the Beard Al podcast.
If the hosts of four Weird Al podcasts in one episode didn't tip you off enough, we will talk about the classic Weird Al track, I Think I'm a Clone Now.
The epic episode, Epic-isode, drops on April 29th.
This past week, Patreon supporters were treated to scans of the TV Cable Weekly article about the Ricky music video, as well as the uncut Entertainment Tonight segment about the Ricky music video, both from 1983.
Our Patreon family is one of the best families we've ever had. You can join the fun, as well as our upcoming five-year anniversary festivities, over at patreon.com/2000inch. Plus, we wanted to remind you that our close personal friend, Kenneth Gwinnip, will be showing off his incredible Weird Al collection on Collector's Call on Sunday, April 21st on MeTV and MeTV Plus. So be sure to join us over at group.2000inch.com for the watch party when it airs.
All right, we've got two big interviews this episode, so Dave, why don't you take it away?
Our next guest began acting at the age of 13, and her impressive resume includes her iconic portrayal of Blair Warner on The Facts of Life, as well as the runner-up and fan favorite on Survivor Philippines. She currently hosts Collector's Call on MeTV, and we are so excited to talk all about our close personal friend Kenneth Gwinnip's episode. It's our great honor to welcome to the podcast Lisa Welchel. How's it going, Lisa?
Great. Thanks so much for inviting me to talk about this wonderful episode.
We cannot wait to see this episode, and we'd love to hear from you. What was it like seeing Kenneth and his collection in person?
Well, it really was incredible. It was like just like one step removed from, someone who really has impacted my life through people I love so much. Now, I love Weird Al's music. I've really enjoyed it. But my brother, who was actually 20 years younger than me, and then my son, they were both really fanatics. And so
Weird Al
really impacted their lives in ways that I've just been indebted to him. And of course, when you love somebody and they're interested in something or someone, you either want to know about them or it doesn't matter because the person you love talks about them all the time anyway. I learned a lot about Weird Al. And so I've actually really, really respected him for a long time as well. Not only admired, but also respected. And those are distinct, ways of feeling.
Have you yourself ever worked with Weird Al prior to Collector's Call?
No, I have not. Now, my brother worked with Weird Al, and that he was an extra in his movie when he was about 14. And he just happened to have his whole Weird Al getup, his costume, the glasses, the wig, and everything in the car. So he talked to the director and he said, "Hey, you want me to put this on? You want me to wear this?" And the director said, "Yeah." And then I don't remember the story exactly, but I think that Weird Al fell off the stage or something and twisted his ankle, and then my brother says that he saved his life. You know, he ran
to him
and he said no, and that he was just taking care of him while they were getting the doctor. I think that it's gotten more and more elaborate over the years, though.
So what was the reaction of your brother and your son hearing that you're doing an episode on a Weird Al collector?
Well, my brother just couldn't believe it. He was so thrilled and so excited. And he had a best friend growing up, and they would both dress up and sing the songs, and they put all kinds of, emotions to the songs and entertain for all of my kids. My son grew up to be a musician, and so he was as impressed that I was meeting Bermuda Schwartz as the fact that Weird Al was making a little appearance.
Oh, that's so great.
But I made a terrible, terrible blunder that we still laugh about, because I was trying to tell Bermuda Schwartz how grateful I was for Weird Al's impact on my son, because I was a very strict parent and wouldn't let my kids listen to anything, any music that was, or lyrics that were, you know, quote unquote, inappropriate. And so, but Weird Al's music was all really great music, but it also was appropriate. And I tried to tell Bermuda Schwartz how grateful I was. I said, because, you know, they got to listen to Weird Al's music because it, you know, it wasn't real music. It wasn't real rock and roll. That's what I say. It wasn't real rock and roll. And my son Tucker later said, "Mom, please tell me you did not tell the greatest drummers of all time that he wasn't playing real rock and roll."
Oh no! I understand what you mean, but yeah, that is maybe not how to classify it.
Oh no!
Oh wow, that is so fun, and so you know, you get to see these collectors and these collections in person. Is there anything about, you know, a Weird Al collection or Kenneth that reminded you of other collectors? Are there similarities between this type of person?
Yeah, I think there are. I mean, as far as the main thread through most all the collectors, and I'd even say 95% of the ones that we've had on our show, the collection, the started in childhood, if not the collection, at least what it's, you know, the thread is linked to the childhood, something that they want to capture, or a relationship or a feeling or a memory. But also I think that it's passion and purpose. And that was very, very apparent for, you know, for this show. There's just the passion and the purpose for collecting something that is so very meaningful to them.
And I know you've seen a lot of different collections from a lot of different people. Are you ever surprised when you walk into somebody's collection just to see either the volume or what they have?
I'm always surprised because there are some homes that are just huge, multiple stories and multiple rooms filled wall to wall, ceiling to floor with things. But then there are some smaller homes that appear to have the same amount of items, just in a much smaller So it is always pretty extravagant and overflowing. And yet you ask them about one item and they can tell you where they got it, the history about it, you know, how much they paid for it, what it means to them. I mean, there are thousands of items, but really there are just thousands of individual memories.
Do you get nervous when you're there and the actual trade part is being filmed and discussed and negotiated?
I get nervous, but you know, I do feel for the collector because it's really difficult for most of them to let anything go, even if they are being offered something they've really, really, really wanted and looked for and haven't been able to find. It's quite a tug of war within their heart because everything they have is so meaningful to them. There's a story behind it. There's the hunt behind it. There's the what it means to them, not only from the item, but also how they got the item. And so to let go of something, they have to let go a piece of their heart in order to allow a new piece in. And no matter how valuable the new piece is, the one that's been in their heart has only increased in value over time.
Right.
Yeah. As collectors, myself and Ethan, we can sympathize with the collector as to what they must be going through in that particular moment.
So I've seen a lot of press photos and also previews for some of the things coming up, and you get to actually like touch this stuff, and you know, when it's like a vehicle, you get to sit in it or put it on. I mean, is there anything that really stands out to you as being a favorite in that sense?
Yeah, that would be really, really hard because there are things that I would qualify as my favorite because they were something that I grew up with. But then there's some things that you know, I don't know that I would qualify as a favorite, but I would think, oh man, I had no idea. And I've learned so much just by people's collections. I mean, they really are pieces of history. So you can learn history. They are pieces of art. You can learn art. This show is entertaining, but it's also really educational in lots of ways. And so I'm always enjoy something about them. I mean, I would say definitely the things that seem to be something that I loved in my own childhood, I'm certainly going to get even more excited about. Or right. Like in this case with Weird Al, something that was so meaningful to my brother and my son.
Did you talk to your son and your brother ahead of the episode as research? And did they ask you to look for anything particular in Kenneth's collection to see if he had it?
Not really for research. I tried it. My son really tried to make it out to come with me to see that particular episode. And he was unable to. So, but I took lots and lots and lots and lots of pictures and sent them home.
Oh, good.
Real time. Oh, great.
When you're visiting someone's collection who collects memorabilia of, you know, TV shows and costumes and that kind of thing, do they react to meeting you differently than someone who is maybe a Weird Al collector?
You know, they do within like the first 5 minutes, but after that, anything that feels odd or unique or even a little bit uncomfortable because, you know, they perhaps, you know, watch me on TV or whatever, and I'm suddenly in their house, that goes away, because then really the star of the show is the collection. And so all the attention goes to the collection, and I'm learning something, and they're in their element sharing their stories about their collection. And then we have an expert we're both learning from. So there, you know, it wears off pretty quickly, and I am outshone by the collections time and time.
Has there ever been an instance where you're in someone's house and they have something you wore on Facts of Life or something like that?
Yeah, we did. We did a Facts of Life collector one season. We also did Charlotte Ray's son. It had Charlotte Ray, who played Mrs. Garrett, her whole personal private collections. And so, yeah, there were a couple of items that both of those times that I thought, man, why didn't I bring that home?
When you show up, are they like asking you to autograph stuff or something like that?
Typically, there'll be something. A lot of them are autograph collectors, or they have something, or because they know I'm coming, they get something.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I will autograph it.
Oh, that's so
very nice. Now, I understand that there's also a Survivor episode coming up this season. What can you tell us about that? Were there any Lisa Welchel items in this Survivor's collection?
There were so many much better items than Lisa Welchel items for the real Survivor stars, all the ones that were, you know, on the All Stars or won the $1 million or the first episode. They had all those of us who truly are Survivor fans would be much more excited to see than any Lisa Welchel thing. He did give me something that it looked like that it was a name tag that had been originally created for our torches. And they must not have used them because we didn't have names on our torches, but there was a Lisa, and there's only been one Lisa on the show, and we got a picture of her torch and there was no name. So anyway, so the collector gave it to me, and now I have it in my little, what I call my Survivor shrine, which is a little shadow box with some of the things that I did bring home, including my buff and my bag and my water bottle and that kind of thing.
So are you a collector too? Do you have certain things that you collect?
I'm not a collector. And my personality type is much more of a less is more kind of person. So I probably wouldn't be inclined to collect, but I will tell you this, I will never, ever do another show without bringing one item home. So I guess I am a collector now. It's just of things, because there's so much. It's such a great way to capture a good memory and have it in your home, and you can look at it, and not only are you seeing the item, but you're seeing the good times that's behind that item. And so I have learned to definitely collect things from my own work.
And did your parents or family members collect Lisa Welchel items as you were becoming a star?
My grandmother did. My grandmother was my the president of my fan club, and, and so she collected quite a few things. And my mom is not a collector, and I'm not a collector. So after my grandmother passed, there is a definitely a big gap where we needed her around to think ahead and realize, you know, right. I want this stuff.
Lisa, this has been such an awesome experience getting to have you on the podcast. Talk about Collector's Call. Talk about Kenneth Gwynup and Weird Al. We are so excited for April 21st to see the episode all about the Weird Al collection at Kenneth's house. And we are just so excited to have you on the show and to talk about this. So thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for inviting me to be able to share about it. It's going to be a great, really fun show. Whether you're a Weird Al fan or not, you're going to go away being a fan, whether you started watching the shows one or not. And also a Kenneth fan.
Aw, thank you, Lisa. It was such an honor to have you on the podcast.
We did some research after the interview and learned that the movie Lisa's brother is a background actor in is the 1998 Disney television film Safety Patrol. He's in the scene where Weird Al sings The Ballad of Kent Marlowe. How pretty stinking majestic.
But that's not all, because we are now joined by yet another great guest from the MeTV and Collector's Call family.
Dave and I are absolutely thrilled to be talking to the executive producer of MeTV's hit television show, Collector's Call. They have an upcoming episode with a close personal friend and fellow superfan, Kenneth Gwynup, coming up. So please welcome to the podcast, Mike Schmiedler. How's it going, Mike?
Good, good, good. Very good. Thanks, Ethan. Thanks, Dave. Appreciate you guys having me on.
We are so excited to chat with you. Collector's Call is such an incredible show, but it speaks to us on another level, because Dave and I are collectors ourselves. And we can't believe that you have one of our fellow friends and Weird Al collectors on an upcoming episode.
Well, I have to say, Kenneth's tremendous. Kenneth is our Weird Al collector that we're going to be featuring on our episode, and he is dynamite. Obviously, I think he speaks certainly to Weird Al fans. But even if you don't like Weird Al, and if you don't like Weird Al, what's wrong with you? But even if you don't like Weird Al, I think you really will enjoy Kenneth's episode, because he is like that guy's 100% charm and heart. That's all I can say.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, we've been close friends with Kenneth for a long time. We're so excited to see his episode coming up on April 21st. And there's so much we want to cover about Kenneth. Did you get to see Kenneth's collection in person?
Absolutely. Yeah, of course. We spent a very long day at his house filming the episode. So we spent a cool 14 hours with him. Got to really dive deep into the collection and see it all. And he and his wife were very generous for allowing us to hang out for the duration of the day there.
Oh, they're just the best. I'm so glad you got to go in person and witness the majesty that is Kenneth's collection. Now, before we even get into too much Weird Al, I would love to talk about Collector's Call itself. And I would love if you could share the premise for people who maybe haven't seen the show yet, because it's really special and interesting.
Absolutely, absolutely. So the show's on MeTV. That's Memorable Entertainment Television. And, you know, our brand really is nostalgia. And I think that's what Collector's Call does such a great job of speaking to for all the viewers, is nostalgia. And so we celebrate the nostalgia in people's collections. So the format of the show is we take Lisa Welchel, who is our host and is a phenomenal host, phenomenal person, and just frankly a delight. She's the host. We travel around the country meeting people with the most amazing collections we can find. We bring an expert along to appraise their treasure, and they bring something that they know that the collector is looking for, and they offer it in trade for something they already have. And so then as the cold open goes, will there be a trade? It's the collector's call. So that's the format to the show. Pretty simple format, right? Allows you to really kind of see the collection, get a beat on value as a whole, to see like if, you know, some folks have really got some incredibly valuable collections, and it's interesting to hear how they've acquired them, how they've bought them. Some people with means are able to pay a lot of money, and other people are able to, you know, find incredible bargains along the way. And so that's fascinating. And then the trade's kind of the payoff at the end.
Now, I understand Collector's Call premiered in 2019, and I believe Kenneth submitted in 2019.
Yes. So we did indeed, Kenneth. We've got a really great group of folks that work on the show. And Our senior coordinating producer is Dinah Botkin. So she kind of gets a lot of the submissions in there. And then our whole team kind of vets and talks about it. And when we got that one, I was like, oh, Weird Al would be phenomenal. And his collection is obviously dynamite looking as well. And then we just kind of had to wait until we try and group. So when we go one place, we'll shoot 4 or 5 episodes in LA or in Boston, or in this case, Seattle, in this, the Washington area. So, it took us a little bit, but we definitely kept him on our short list for sure. And, are really glad that we did.
That's incredible. So when you finally are able to record with Kenneth, what is that process like? You know, I guess, you know, you get the submission and he must send in some photos and some information, but then how do you actually validate that, you know, Kenneth is who he says he is and his collection is worthy of the Collector's Call show?
Sure, sure. Absolutely. So, the team will do that. One thing good that came out of the pandemic is with Zoom, our pre-interview process is we can really get to know the collector and frankly see their collection pretty intimately with just being on Zoom.
Yeah.
Right. So we do a lot of pre-interviewing, you know, usually do a background check on folks too, just to make sure they're, you know, everything's square and copacetic,
sure. But that makes sense.
In that pre-production, interview and Zoom, you know, we get to know them, we get to know their collection, what their passion is, what drew them to it, and then kind of get to see their display and the expanse of it and everything like that. So once we do that, we start to make decisions and start to target like, okay, we know we've got, you know, 3 people up in Washington, let's find 2 more and, you know, make that trip worth it. And also we want to make sure we get a good variety of things, right? I mean, you know, we could do an entire show just on toys, and we always do a few episodes on toys a season because toy collecting is so prevalent and it's nostalgic, yeah. Right? I mean, yeah, that's throwback right to when people were young. But we want a good variety of collections throughout the season of the show. And so Kenneth is certainly our first Weird Al collector, but hopefully not our last. Hopefully not our last.
Ah, okay.
Well, you're talking to the right people if you ever need a sequel.
There you go. There you go. Exactly. Exactly.
Is there an opportunity to just change it into Weird Al Collector's Call? Can there just be a spin-off series?
I feel like that's a little niche, right? A little niche. Certainly an audience for it, but you know, it might be a little too in the pocket for it.
I mean, we've managed to make an entire podcast about Weird Al work for 5 years, so you know, I think there's a possibility there.
Yeah, no, it's impressive what you guys have done, and your guest list is beyond impressive. That's I don't think I'm holding water against who you've had on the show. That's for sure.
Thank you. Yeah, we love Al, and we know there's people out there who love him too. So it's always nice to know that. Now, I understand, are you a fan of Weird Al yourself?
I am. I am a giant fan of Weird Al myself. So I've been a fan since I was a young man. And you wouldn't know it by my voice, but I'm not a young man anymore. I've got a brother who's 20 months younger. And so, you know, we were big fans growing up. And we had, you know, all his albums. And, you know, I can remember repeatedly in our room playing Nerf basketball and skipping Dare to Be Stupid, the vinyl, look, because we were like being a little too rough, you know, being a little too rough. And I also remember I had the Weird Al Yankovic, the first on cassette, and the printing on the label of the cassette was worn out from taking it out and turning it over and sliding it into our jam box again and again and again and again and again. So I've been a big fan since I was a young man. I mean, I just, he's so creative. I love his humor is so smart. The songs are great. And he just, he's kind of a one of a kind of artist, you know, and the fact that he's been able to maintain this for the amount of time he has is incredible. It really is incredible. And on the show, what was interesting so far, our expert, we got to bring in John Bermuda Schwartz, who your audience will certainly know. And absolutely. So I was geekily excited to meet him as well. And he could not unsurprisingly be a more nicer human being if he tried. And certainly more knowledgeable, because for those of the folks listening who don't know, he's also the archivist for Alan, for the band as a whole. So his depth of knowledge is just absolutely incredible. You know, the stories he told were amazing, you know, on camera for sure. And then you'll see in the trade scene, the items he brought for trade was also equally incredible. And talk about rare Al items that couldn't be more personalized if they tried, you know, so it was true.
Absolutely. I'm very excited to see what Bermuda did bring and try to tempt Kenneth with, because I know Kenneth has an impressive collection and I've seen part of Bermuda's collection as well. There's another episode for you going through Bermuda's collection.
Yeah.
Amazing. And he's got amazing, some incredible, incredible insider stuff that just nobody would ever imagine even exists. And the fact that he could offer that kind of stuff to Kenneth, I mean, that's got to be I'm very interested to see how Kenneth reacted and what he did on the episode. But I'm curious, since you touched on the experts, how is it that you find a John Bermuda Schwartz and what makes a good expert?
Yeah, so, you know, a typical expert for our show is you want them to know the collection, right? You want them to know the source material of the collection. And so a lot of times it's a fellow collector, sometimes it's a dealer, sometimes it's an appraiser. It all kind of depends on what the topic is of the collection. And so in this case, I thought, well, there's no better person than to appraise a Weird Al collection than the archivist for Weird Al himself. And that's John. So I, you know, approached him and he couldn't have been more open and receptive, and he knows Kenneth, which was interesting, you know, and I just kind of didn't know, like, often collectors do know, like, we had an Elton John collector who'd been to over 100 Elton John concerts, and Elton knows him by face and name and everything. And John basically kind of said the same thing about Kenneth, right? Like, everybody knows Kenneth and everybody loves him. And so it's great when you have, you know, those collectors, as John kind of said, that you reach a certain level, there's a number of collectors that we all know. And right. And Kenneth is definitely one of those. And so it was great. It was great to have him there.
So has there been an expert like Bermuda on where they're, I guess, as intimately close to the source material of what the collector's collecting, but also someone that the collector knows personally?
We definitely have had experts on who have known the collector personally, because a lot of times, you know, that gives us an upper hand from a show perspective. If, you know, they're familiar with the collection, especially if it's a large, you know, expansive collection, and it could be an appraiser who they've worked with or a dealer who they've bought a lot of stuff from. Okay. And we've, that's been anybody who, especially there's a few people in the screen use costumes are a real interesting thing. You can't get enough of them. And there's a few people who are dealers on that front who have been our experts, and they know they know the merchandise, but they also know the market really well. And then they know the collectors themselves. We had a share collector on who she'd only shown her share collection to like 8 people. And I'm not talking about like 8 shows. I'm talking about 8 total people.
Wow.
And so, you know, her willingness to share it with us as a show, and then really a national audience, was really special that she was willing to kind of open up and share it with us in that way. Right. So that's one thing we try and be on the show is, you know, I think tonally we're always celebratory. We're excited to see it, and we're real excited to show it to the rest of the country. And so it's fun when you get somebody who maybe hasn't shown a lot of their collection. Right. And it's great for all us fans out there to really get a good look at it.
One thing that strikes me about the show, and I think it's obvious that, you know, when people think of collecting, they think of value and they think of worth. And I know from my personal collection, that's not something I think about. And I'm just curious if you run into that when you are speaking with these collectors. I mean, I don't know if I'm speaking for Dave, but at least speaking for myself, I collect because I like it. I don't collect because I'm investing in something. I'm curious your perspective on that.
For sure. And I would say that is definitely the overriding theme for most of our collectors, right? They're in it because they love it. They love the collection. They love what they're collecting. Oftentimes, it's been something that they've collected since they were kids, really, or maybe it harkens back to when they were kids, and it all is kind of rooted in that nostalgia and that celebration of kind of what, you know, that first excitement that we can all remember from when we were a kid, where you get something, you're like, whether it's that TV show or whether it's a musician or whether, you know, it's bikes or whatever it is, we're like, oh God, I still remember my first. We had a Schwinn collector, and he had hundreds of Schwinns, and he loved bikes, and it all came back to like these, you know, classic Schwinn bikes. So it all kind of is what harkens back. And, you know, a lot of the collectors will say like, oh, it's great to know that it's worth X, Y, or Z, but you know what, the monetary value doesn't really matter to me. It's more about, you know, having it and then sharing it with fellow collectors, sharing it with family, sharing it with, you know, outside family and friends who love to come over. We have a jukebox collector this season, and his house is full of jukeboxes, and his basement's huge and it has all these jukeboxes, and he loves to have all his family parties there, right? They come over and everybody gets to pick music to play, and he's got lights going, and it's amazing. It's amazing. So it's great. I mean, the collecting world is great. And also another thing is there's a real sense of community there amongst the collectors. You know, everybody's trying to get something, and whereas you would imagine it could be competitive, what we found is a lot of people help each other to find things that are missing, right? Things they want, things they want to pick up. You know, if somebody's got one, they may not give theirs up, but they're always looking to give their fellow collector or find it if they're out, you know, hunting. They're always looking to pick up stuff for somebody else as well.
Yeah, I think we can definitely speak to that. The Weird Al collecting community is very generous in that sense.
That's great. That's great. As it should be, right?
Although it might be more fun if it was cutthroat and we were all fighting all the time.
That's a different TV show, everybody. Yeah. That's a different TV
I think show. So, yeah. Now, Mike, I'm curious to hear some of the challenges of shooting some of these impressive collections. You know, sometimes people have like space issues and maybe they don't necessarily have the room to display an entire collection. So what kind of consideration goes into what gets shown on the actual Collector's Call show and what sort of logistics are involved with shooting someone's collection?
No, that's a great question. And it's always a challenge, right? Because, you know, some folks have, you know, incredibly giant, beautiful homes with just display after display after display. And then other folks just have a part of, you know, a small room. Or even one of my favorite collections we did was a guy who collected autographs. And he'd been doing it for so many decades that he has pictures of each person signing the thing with actual film and picture. Wow. And on the back of everything, he would have the negative and the photo. And it was literally in the unfinished portion of his basement. Fred was his name. And he, such a passionate guy. And his methodology was so great because he had gotten all the, I mean, the provenance was amazing. He'd done it all himself. Like 98% of everything he had was signed in person for him.
Wow.
And correct. So it was great to see that display. That being said, his space was pretty small. And, you know, we have four cameras plus sound, plus producer, plus hair, plus makeup, plus a PA, plus a grip, plus, yeah, there's a lot. There's like, you know, 14 right. of us jammed into a small space. So, you know, we always make it work, right? We always make it work. We try and get in there. And as for number of items featured, that's hard to narrow down, right? We always are looking for maybe what means the most to the collector. What's the most impressive? What our audience is going to remember or be attracted to? What are items, you know, that are like, oh my God, I remember, you know, I've seen this there. Right. I remember this video. So then we narrow it down. We shoot about 8 items. 6 items make it to air. And then usually 2 items are kind of web exclusive or we'll throw on social. So that's kind of how we narrow the scope. Yeah. Of the actual shoot.
And to choose those items, you're taking input from the collector and the expert. Is that how you're deciding what gets shot?
For sure. And really our team, right? So like for Kenneth's episode, Rob Rohde was our writer and producer on that episode, and he worked with Diana, who I mentioned, and myself. And then Alyssa is our Alyssa Shapiro is the other co-EP, and so we all kind of weigh in, and we all kind of say, okay, would this be good? Would that be good? Is this on brand? Is that what's the story behind that? Does this have a great story? And so we kind of all weigh in. If they give us a list, usually we ask for a bigger list of like 15 items, because it's obviously tough for the collector to be like, here's my top 5
right.
items or 6 items.
Right.
So,
right.
you know, usually they'll give us 15 or 20 and then we'll be like, how about these 8? How does this sound? And then kind of go from there. Cause also again, with some stuff, we don't want to be too repetitive. For instance, Batman is very popular, right? It's popular on screen used costumes. It's popular on toys. It's just, it's a popular entity for whatever reason. I feel like we always have a lot of Batman. So we try and be in a season, we try and be judicious with the amount of Batman, just in case there's some people that don't enjoy the Batman as much as others. We don't want to overload those non-Batman lovers, right? So, you know, it's all about proportions. So, we kind of vet it with them, but you know, we want that exciting story. We want that unique thing and the expert too, to be like, oh my God, this doesn't come up for auction once every 20 years or something like that. Right. And it's kind of like, wow. Or this truly, we had a vintage movie poster collector who had a Godzilla movie poster, or I'm sorry, King Kong movie poster from Italy. And literally the expert's like, this is the only one I know that exists. and it was literally a poster, but it was worth like $650,000.
Oh, wow.
Because it was just this one. And that was really it. So that's always interesting too, is when you come up with those items that are like, yeah, this is one of a kind, truly.
Now, I understand that the actual date that Kenneth's episode was filmed happened to be quite an important date for Weird Al fans.
Absolutely. And we felt that we were honoring Al as so on his birthday by filming Kenneth's collection on Al's birthday.
I love it. Was so that intentional?
No, you know, just kismet. Wow. Right there. Right. I mean, you know, just that's, you know, I don't know if that's the Holy Spirit or what your belief is, but, you know, the Holy Al working behind the scenes to make it happen. But yeah, no, that was great that it was his birthday. So we all definitely saluted Al on his birthday.
What better way to salute Al?
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Was there anything in Kenneth's collection that stood out the most to you as maybe your favorite that you're able to talk about since we haven't seen the episode yet?
I mean, he has so much great stuff, right? I mean, he's got an autographed guitar from the whole band that Jim West used. That's really, really cool. I will say, and I mean, especially he's got so many, so much of Al's music on various forms, right? Be it vinyl, be it tape, be it UHF, I think he's got almost everyone out there except two or something like that. I mean, just totally. I mean, Kenneth's a thorough man, but he had this jacket that was a close personal friends of Al jacket that was super cool. And it was great to hear because John obviously had the jacket as well. And it was from one of the attorneys who worked for Al. And like, there were so few made that like John knew whose jacket it was. It just had like, right. First name on it. And he's like, oh, that's his jacket. And he talked about like what he did on making it and where it came from. And so that was also very, very cool to think that like, you know, these jackets were made this long ago. There's really probably not very many around. And, yeah. And Kenneth's got it, you know, Kenneth's got it.
And he's got it in mint condition.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
It's so cool.
Yeah, no, Kenneth's display is tremendous. He really has done a very nice job of displaying the collection, which I think you will see in the episode for sure.
Yeah, Kenneth always goes above and beyond with anything that he puts on display in his collection. He does a really good job of knowing what's rare and important to Weird Al fans, and then of course showcasing it in a way that really shows it off very well.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And I'm curious about now a similar question to what I asked a little while ago, but from the expert side, is it the expert that decides what to bring for the trade? And do you have any input into what they're bringing?
Sure. So it kind of works both ways. We always ask the collector, like, okay, give me a list of things that you are on the lookout for, right? And then that way we can give it to the expert and say, okay, here's what's on their wish list, just so you know kind of what they're looking for. And then depending on the expert, they may pick something directly from that list, or they may get a sense for, okay, great. I have a good sense of the collection. So I know I'm going to bring X, Y, or Z. Right. Mm-hmm. For instance, we've done Barbie a few times, and there's always a few Barbies that the collector's looking for. And so the expert is able to, you know, it's helpful because there's so many Barbies. You don't want to necessarily bring something and, you know, have it be like, yep, got that. So, right. You know, because that also doesn't make for, frankly, very compelling television. So we try and get a sense of like, okay, they don't have this. Or if they have something, we'll try and, you know, gather a little intel on our part and be like, do you have anything from X, Y, or Z? And at least have them be like, no, right? Mm-hmm. So, it really kind of varies. And, you know, all of our experts have different ways of finding stuff and bringing it in. And what's interesting is in a few cases, you know, we've had an expert bring something that may belong to a client, for lack of a better word, right? Like somebody who buys from them often and they know they've got something, and then they'll bring it, and then they actually have to like call off camera and be like, okay, here's the deal.
Wow.
I brought, you know, they brought X. They're willing to trade for Y. Do you want to do this, right? And or they'll come in knowing like, okay, they want X, Y, and Z, and if you can make it happen, just do the trade, you know. And so and our experts will say that some, if they'll be like, oh, well, I've got a friend, but you know, it's impressive how much cool stuff they're able to kind of bring to the table. And it's always interesting to us, like. I'll never forget there was this Pac-Man episode, and our Pac-Man collector had this really cool lamp that when you turn it on the bulb, the heat from it, it was, had this kind of circular shade and with slats at the top, and the heat from the bulb spun the slats. And so it was supposed to be like Pac-Man was running. There was kind of two things to the outside of the shade. So I'm not doing a great job explaining it, but it was a unique lamp. And our expert wanted the lamp, and he, cause it's already aired. I can tell you the collector traded for the lamp, and we were all like, oh my God, I can't believe he traded for the lamp. Like we literally were on the edge of our seat because he talked about like how this was like his prize thing. And he was game to trade the lamp. So, you know, it's fun. It's fun for those of us making the show too, to kind of see what's going to happen, you know?
Yeah.
And there are also times Lisa does a nice job of kind of, moving things along, because there's deliberation can take a little while off camera.
Sure.
So
I'm sure
we try and kind of move it along, because otherwise there'd be a lot of deciding going on.
Now, I think, you know, based on what you've said and what I know of the show, I think it's an obvious answer, but it's not TV magic. They're really making a deal.
Yeah. Yeah. No. Yeah. They make the trades. Like I said, in that Pac-Man one, we're like, there goes the lamp. You know, it's kind of like, all right, there it goes. I'm like, God, I hope he finds another lamp. Yeah. But then by the same token, you know, some of the stuff that they get, and it's interesting because even when they're deliberating, they'll be like, I know I can find another, you know, Malibu Barbie from, you know, 1976, but I won't be able to find another Venezuelan produced Barbie from 1985, right. You know, and they know, I mean, that's the thing. You guys are collectors, you know, the market, right? You know, what's hard to find.
Sure.
So, yeah, you know, you know, when it's like, okay, I got to grab this. I don't know when it's going to come up again.
Has there been any time where someone changes their mind after filming or after you've already filmed it? They're like, actually, no, I need to have that back or anything like that.
I mean, not that I've seen, you know, I mean, what happens after we're gone, who knows, right? We're not going to police that action, but, we're pretty clear going in, right? Like, you know, everyone knows the show at this point, since we're on season right. five, and we're pretty upfront with like, here's the format of the show. This is what we're doing, you know? So, you know, it's people know what it is coming in.
And I don't know if you keep statistics on this or not, but like what percentage of people are taking the trade?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. I mean, usually it's about 50-50, maybe 60-40 sometimes, but usually it's about 50-50.
Oh, wow.
It's interesting because even as we're filming, we kind of track it within the course of like, you know, because we kind of film back-to-back days. Usually when we go someplace for production, right, we'll kind of set down in that city and we'll just go right in a row and film a bunch of episodes. And so as the week goes on, we'll be like, okay, two yes, two no. What's today going to be? Tiebreaker for the week, everybody. Right.
Do you have side bets going on, you and the crew?
Yeah. No wagering, no wagering, no wagering on the sides, everybody.
I am really curious to hear about, I don't know how much you can tell us. I know the episode hasn't aired yet, but the press release for this new season does mention that Weird Al himself beams in for a shout out and passes along a special personal gift. What can you tell us about that? That is just so exciting to hear.
Well, I can say that Weird Al, in his most Weird Al fashion, certainly delivers a message to Kenneth that is both hilarious and personal to Kenneth. And I would say very crowd pleasing for all of us who are fans, as only he can do. Oh. He is so clever that you're just like, what a delight. What an absolute delight. And yeah, he definitely surprised Kenneth, and I won't be able to say anything other than you know, there is a little leave behind for Kenneth, which is something that almost left Kenneth speechless. So I will just say that. And and it was great. I mean, all of us were real, real excited for it. So, yeah, I mean, Al's great. I met him once. And so I will say, and I know you guys have had him on the podcast and you guys have interacted with him a ton, but he did not disappoint. I've been working in television really since college. So I've had the pleasure of meeting a lot of talent and working with a lot of talent, and people are great. And that's one of the best things about this job, right? Is I get to meet a lot of talent, and they're great people. And so I remember I got to meet him, and I posted a photo of me and him. And so some of my friends were like, "Oh, that's great. You worked with Al." And I'm like, "No." And they're like, "What do you mean? No, like, how did you meet him?" I'm like, "Oh, I just ran into him on the street in Chicago." But like, literally. So I was out at lunch, and this is probably even more terrifying. So I'm walking, and he's just walking by himself in Chicago, like kind of smiling, just walking. I'm like, "Al." And he's like, "Yes." And I was like, "Oh my God, welcome to Chicago. You're here for the 25th anniversary of UHF. You guys are going to be up at the Vic tonight." And I think if that didn't terrify him at that point, that I knew why he was here in Chicago, I think it should have. But he was like, "Yeah." And I was like, "Oh, well, congrats. I hope you have a great visit here. Hey, do you mind if I get a picture? I've been a big fan my whole life. My brother and I were great fans of yours. Is there any way I can get a picture?" He's like, "Of course." And so we take a selfie and he goes about his day. But yeah, he was everything that I'd hoped for in my interaction. And I appreciate the fact that he did not recoil when I provided him with the information as to why he was in town. And in retrospect, as I told that story to my friends, they're like, "That's kind of creepy." And I was like, "Yeah, when I say it out loud like that, it's a little creepy."
Oh, that's so cool. Well, I'm really curious to hear what it was like now actually officially working with Al behind the scenes to make this special surprise for Kenneth happen.
Oh, I mean, you know, obviously tremendous, right? Like I said, I mean, you guys know you've interacted with him. He's the real deal. He's a genuinely dynamite person who's a celebrity, but also is super kind and accessible and just very generous of heart, I would say.
And so did you approach him on this, or how did Al get involved with the production?
I reached out to Jay Levy, and Jay was generous enough to make it happen for us. Who also, big shout out to Jay for everything he did to support us along the way in this episode.
So cool. Did you create this show, or are you brought on once it was created?
So no, I'm one of the people. So Alyssa Shapiro, who I mentioned, who's the co-executive producer with me, she and I kind of created it together. It was her idea to do collections, and we wanted to do something that engaged, again, nostalgia. That is the brand of the network. And so she came up with the great idea of doing collections, because they are, a lot of our viewers do collect, and they're so evocative of nostalgia. And so then we kind of worked on format and batted it around, and really, you know, a group effort at MeTV. Neil Saban was heavily involved, you know, who's kind of the guru of the entire network. He invented the network itself. Steve Farber, who's in our operations, he actually came up with a title. Will Givens, who's, you know, on the promo side, did a lot to kind of bring it to fruition. So, I mean, there's a real huge team of folks, both at the network and then even on the show side, who really work on it to bring it to fruition. But yeah, it worked. It was kind of like it clicked. We're like, "Oh, this is great. This works on brand." And then I actually brought Lisa Welchel in. I had done a pilot with her and previously, and when this came up, I was like, "Oh, Lisa would be perfect for this." Cause she is so good with people. She's very sharp, very funny, very quick, and is also supernaturally curious. So she loves hearing about how people got started and why they're involved and with collections and that kind of thing. So it really kind of pulled all those elements together. And, you know, I think we've got something fun that's working, and it's great to see the audiences are responding to it and sticking with it for sure.
Now, do you, Alyssa, or anyone else on your staff collect in a way that, you know, or is showcased on this show?
Yeah, so that's a great question. I always say, you know, I collect baseball cards, and note that over the 5 seasons of this show, there's never been an episode on baseball cards. And I will say that because I collect baseball cards. I like baseball cards. I would not watch a TV show on baseball cards. and I mean that from the kindest place that I possibly can. Right. So, no, I mean, we choose our collections based on, I think, what is interesting, what's visual, what's nostalgic, and what appeals to kind of that broader audience. So even if, like, we did a Rolling Stones collector, even if you get certain musicians, Van Halen, even if you don't like Van Halen, you're still super intrigued by some musician, and you're intrigued to see what a Van Halen collector is going to have that's unique, right? And you could say the same of, you know, screen used costumes. I keep harkening back to those just because Everybody has seen that movie or that TV show and they've loved it for some reason. And it stayed with them their whole life. And so having those touch points are what really draw people in. And the same thing for toys, right? We've all played with a certain toy, or if you didn't have it, your brother or your sister or your neighbor had that toy, and it brings you right back. And so really those are the touch points. And so, you know, baseball cards, great as they are, and I love them, it's just kind of a different collectible. Same thing for, like, no offense, coins, right? Like, we're not going to do a coin collection for a whole hour. It's just not kind of the tone of the show.
Not as flashy as, you know, Weird Al's guitar that was used on stage.
What is, everybody? Come on, what is? I really want to say one thing that really elevates our show is certainly our editors, and Mike Dombrowski was the editor on this episode, but really our graphics team is pretty phenomenal. If folks are fans of the show, we do a lot of things that are clever and fun with graphics. And so that's Quest Rogers, Ali Mamerol, Kaylin Younger, and Joel Mullenbach. And they really, they have a lot of fun with, be it a movie poster or be it something. And it kind of shows the humor of the show. And that's really where kind of the language and tone of the show comes through, is in our graphics. And those guys do a really great job of pulling that through.
And you gave us a little bit of a tease that said that Weird Al will appear in Kenneth's episode at some point. Are there any other examples where somebody was collecting, let's say, a musical artist or something like that, and the actual musician themselves showed up on the show?
You bet. We did a Kiss Collections, and Gene Simmons made an appearance on that one.
Wow, cool.
That was cool. Great. We've got, it was super great. We've got a Survivor episode this year, and Jeff Probst shows up on there.
Oh, nice.
Very cool.
And for Survivor fans, our expert is Ethan Zahn, who actually won
awesome.
Survivor Africa. And then he was competed in two other Survivors. And then Lisa Welcher was actually on Survivor as well. And so between Ethan and Lisa, we had so much Survivor inside baseball that if you're a Survivor fan, you're going to way geek out on this episode, because it's a lot of fun Survivor stories. That's the fun part too, is, you know, pulling in celebrities, you know, here and there where we can, and they love it. They love celebrating, you know, that somebody's so into their collection and they can bring joy. Dolly Parton was on our Dolly Parton episode and surprised our collector with a wardrobe
That's
item.
Cool.
And she was nice. I mean, come on, Dolly Parton's an American treasure. I mean, literally. So, you know, it's great. It's great.
She's up there with Al for sure.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I'm so looking forward to that Survivor episode. I'm a huge Survivor fan as well.
Oh,
so
then you
I'm
definitely,
very
I mean,
anxious to see that one.
we have the urn from season one with all the votes.
Oh,
I mean,
wow.
He's got like Elizabeth Hasselbeck's torch. I mean, they've got a ton of, it is amazing what they have. It really is amazing.
How cool. Mike, this has been so much fun getting to hear about Collector's Call and hearing about the insights behind Kenneth Gwinnip's awesome episode coming up on April 21st on MeTV. And if people have not yet watched MeTV, they probably already have it. I think it's in, most people have access to it, but just in case, you can head over to metv.com. You can find out where to watch and catch up on this season before we see Kenneth on, like I said, April 21st.
Outstanding. Well, Ethan and Dave, thank you guys so much. Appreciate you having me and Lisa both on, and so appreciate you know, you supporting Weird Al as we are looking to celebrate him ourselves on MeTV.
Wow, thank you for all that great information, Mike. We cannot wait to check out Kenneth Gwinnip's episode of Collector's Call on MeTV April 21st and the rest of the great episodes that do not feature Kenneth on MeTV Plus.
This episode is brought to you in part by Discover Darwin, promoting tourism in Darwin, Minnesota. Not only is historic Darwin, Minnesota beautiful, it's also highly reviewed.
Last episode, we share Dan Paulson's one-star review for Smitty's in Darwin, and we tease that he has written a second review focused on a different establishment.
Well, first off, let's remind everyone of his review of Smitty's. Lots left on, even open sign left brightly for you to walk up to a locked door. Change your closing time, D-bags! One star.
Clearly a man of taste, Mr. Paulson also visited and left a review for Jackpot Junction Casino Hotel Casino.
Stole my money! Two stars.
Now, based on our investigation, Jackpot Junction Casino Hotel Casino is located just over an hour south of Darwin, Minnesota in Morton, Minnesota.
And because said Casino Hotel Casino is clearly out of Discover Darwin's jurisdiction, we have reached out to our counterparts at Marvel at Morton for comment on this matter.
So visit Darwin, Minnesota on your next financial fraud-free expedition. Discover Darwin, more than just a twine ball. And after you visit Darwin, Minnesota, be sure to attempt to visit www.discoverdarwin.biz. They'll leave the lights on for you.
Dave and Ethan's 2000-inch Weird Al podcast is brought to you absolutely free thanks to our incredible sponsors, Burrito Burrito, Wizard Burger, our very own Jackson Scoggins, and Discover Darwin. Our podcast is also supported by everyone else in our Patreon family, with special thanks to our very own close personal friend, level Patreon supporters, Javier, Scotto, Matt, Kev, Casey, Allison, Adriana, Gus and Alicia, Zach, Ron, Zeb, Dana B, UH Jeff, Blair, Kenneth, Ajax, also thanks to Aaron and everyone else in our pretty stinking majestic Patreon family.
If you enjoy our highly collectible Weird Al podcast as heard in the Weird the Al Yankovic Story commentary track, please consider supporting us at patreon.com/2000inch. There are awesome benefits like getting your name on the podcast, your very own private RSS feed, which gives you early access to each and every single one of our bonus episodes, and the self-satisfaction of doing something important with your otherwise pitiful, meaningless existence.
And don't forget to check out our official merchandise over at shop.2000inch.com. All proceeds from purchases go directly towards supporting our fine podcast. We'd love hearing from our listeners and other Weird Al fans, so be sure to join our Facebook community at group.2000inch.com and visit our Discord server for even more riveting Weird Al and Red Rumpta Goody related conversations. You can find both of them linked on our website, as well as information about past episodes and guests over at 2000inch.com or weirdalpodcast.com.
Keep up on new episodes, podcast news, and events by following at 2000inch on Facebook, X, Threads, and Instagram. And be sure to subscribe everywhere you listen to podcasts so you do not miss a single episode. Not only does subscribing help the podcast, it automatically protects all of your most prized Weird Al-related possessions by encasing them safely in a clear plastic display case. Plus, we also love it when we receive voicemail via our official patent-pending 27-hour-a-day podcast hotline, 347-SPATULA, as seen in the Illustrated Al, the Songs of Weird Al Yankovic. That number is 347-772-8852. Give it a call or a text, and you might even hear your message in a future episode.
Thank you once again to Lisa Welchill and Mike Schmiedler for joining us this episode. Thank you to the Grammy Award-winning Jim Kimo West for our incredible podcast theme song. And we'd also like to thank Claire Walsh, Brenda Lowry, MeTV, our very own Kenneth Gwinnup, our very own UHF Nucera, Sandy Yankovic, and of course, the incredible Weird Al Yankovic. Oh, and his rude barista. And a big thanks to all of you, our loyal listeners, subscribers, Patreon supporters and sponsors, and everyone else who makes our podcast possible. Except for intern what's-his-name.
Thank you for choosing Dave and Ethan's 2000-inch Weird Al podcast. And until next time, remember to gill and chill, keep listening to Weird Al, and stay cheesy!
From all of us here at Dave and Ethan's 2000 Inch Weird Al Podcast, thank you to all of our pretty stinking majestic listeners for sticking with us for 227 episodes, and congratulations to us for reaching that incredible milestone.
Aw, thank you, and congratulations to you and me too.
I'm just glad our lousy intern Frank didn't try to ruin our special 27 episode by saying something annoying.
Actually, guys, I did have something I wanted to share.
What do you want, Frank?
Well, first off, I wanted to congratulate you on your upcoming 5-year podcast anniversary. It's been pretty stinking majestic getting to be your intern for all of these years, and I look forward to what the future brings.
Yeah, whatever, intern Frank.
Are you done yet?
Not quite. I mean, I do also have some big news to share that you'll want to hear.
Yeah, it's really not a good time, Frank.
You sure? I actually have something new and interesting to announce.
Please go away.
We're wrapping up the episode.
I really think you will want to hear this.
Gotta pass.
That was Dave and Ethan's 2000 Inch Weird Al Podcast, episode 227 Inch.
Shut up, Frank!